This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and Sirius XM Channel 371.
Wes, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, Pack. Great to be with you. Good show today. Looking forward to having Asia Durr with us in the 9 o'clock hour, one of the all-time greats at the University of Louisville, to help us kind of set the table for the for Louisville and Stanford tonight and a chance to go to the Final Four. Kelly Gramlich will be here at 8 o'clock as well. And Gia Kvaratskhelia, the fencing coach, University of Notre Dame, will be here off a national championship. That coach has been with us before, by the way, but looking forward to that.
Coach is what I like to call him. Just call him Coach. When you've won 11 natties, Wes, at Notre Dame, just go by Coach. Yeah. We know who you are. We know who you are. Yeah. All right, we got the hoops to attend to, though. Tonight, though, the ACC,
we do.
The last team standing, be the Louisville Cardinals. Jeff Falls Club.
Come on, Louisville.
Well, they got the hands full tonight, though. The one seed would be Stanford. Mm. Louisville's a two seed, but you know what? It beats the alternative, and that is everybody else is sitting on the couch watching you. And this is going to be a tough one now. I mean, Dana Evans was sensational against Oregon, putting up 29. But the Cards, it will be all hands on deck tonight, Wes. This is no joke. Stanford's got size. They're making threes. They've got the championship DNA. But you know what? So does Louisville. And when you've got great guard play, which the Cards do, it'll take a great, great effort tonight to knock off a one seed.
I thought Muffet McGraw gave us some terrific insight yesterday when she talked about, you know, the reason Stanford will be a challenge for Louisville is Stanford's size.
Yep.
You know, Louisville's got excellent guard play. We all understand that with Haley Van Lith and Dana Evans. But the idea of Stanford's size, the length that Tara Vanderveer's team has, their ability to go end to end, things like that. I think it's going to be the bigger of the challenges for Louisville. Simply put, if Louisville hits threes tonight, you feel a lot better about where Louisville is, right? That part of this seems almost simplistic, but it could really be determinant as to if Jeff Walls' team has the capability to advance tonight, because the inside seems like such a massive challenge, to be honest with you, Pack.
Well, that would all be true, and Louisville's got to, number one, play well. That's a given. They have to make threes. That's a given. They're also going to have to defend the three, because right now, I mean, we keep talking about Stanford and their size inside, which is legit and a problem. I'll tell you what else is a problem. That's Kiana Williams making everything she looks at from beyond the arc. They're going to have to defend the perimeter. So, you know, Stanford, listen, there's a reason they've got a one beside their name. They're a problem on the perimeter. They're a problem inside. They've got that championship DNA that I've talked about. But you know what? If you're Louisville, this is why you play, man. This is what you've worked so hard to be in this position. It's a one versus two. Again, should be a great game if it's anything close to the other one versus two that we had on the ladies' side last night.
Wow.
Between UConn and Baylor and the controversy at the end of the game and Kim Mulkey's comments afterwards. Grab your popcorn because there's no telling what's going to happen. But for Louisville, hey, you've earned the right. You're coming off an incredibly great defensive effort where you only gave up 42 points to an Oregon team. That's their all-time low, Oregon I'm talking about, in the NCAA tournament. So defensively, you're coming off a great effort. Your best player, Dana Evans, is coming off a sensational effort. So from a mojo standpoint, it appears that you got that in order because it's going to take that again tonight. Dana Evans being great and an awesome defensive effort to move on to the Final Four. But this is why you play. It's one versus two. It's a big deal, and we'll be watching tonight.
Jeff Walls, by the way, talked to the media a little bit yesterday about the physical play, especially from his guards.
Mikasa Robinson and Haley Van Lith lead us in rebounding with seven each. That's just the grit that those two have. Those two are as tough of competitors as I've had come through this program in a long time, and that's just embracing physicality. And both of them are willing to do that.
You know, you hear a comment
like that.
I should
say that was from Sunday, by the way, post-game Sunday.
So. Right. But, you know, you hear a comment like that, Wes, and if you did watch the basketball last night, the men and the women, you think of physicality in the men's game. But let me tell you something. the ladies are rough now. You come walking in there with the in the paint, you better bring your lunch. And if you watch the very end of that UConn-Baylor game last night, there was fouls all over the place and whistles being swallowed. So coach knows what he's talking about. You know, he's been down this road before. Three times he's taken Louisville to the Final Four, looking to make it four tonight. But with that size inside, you know, you come flying inside, brother, you better make sure your head's on tight, because the ladies are tough now, and Stanford's no joke.
Yeah. You start looking at the kind of the comparatives here. Louisville's going to have to score the ball. That's – you mentioned the perimeter shooting of Stanford from Williams in particular. You're going to have to score the ball tonight, though, if you're Jeff Walz's team. You almost feel like that the way the Cardinal go up and down the floor, you can't have any empty possessions. Just makes it too hard. And after watching UConn and Baylor last night, that was pretty high-level possession-to-possession basketball, Pack. If we get that tonight, we're the winners for sure on that deal.
Well, when Kelly was filling in for you last week, we were talking about the one line and the two line in the women's game for the tournament. There's not a whole lot of difference between one and the two. And you know what? All the ones and all the twos were legit. I know Maryland got knocked off by Texas, and you know NC State lost to Indiana. But you look across the board here, these twos are looking at ones like, yeah, okay, cool, let's go play. And you saw that last night with Baylor and UConn, which was – it felt like a NCAA championship game, definitely a Final Four game, much less an Elite Eight game. And I suspect when you get the ones and the twos getting after each other, which is what you're going to have tonight with Louisville and Stanford, that's exactly what you're going to get. But the one thing you do know if you're Louisville, that 42 spot you just put up defensively on Oregon, you're probably not going to see 42 only – with Stanford. I know you jump on another Pac-12 team, but like you said, Stanford likes to get up and down the floor, and the way they're making threes only enhances their size inside, because it'd be one thing to say, listen, we're going to pack everything in the paint and just force you to shoot because we don't think you can. Like I said, with Kiana Williams is making everything she looks at for the Cardinals. So that is a real headache, because if she continues to shoot well and Stanford's making a ton of threes, they got a nasty combination. So, again, for Louisville, you know what the challenge is. But when you have Dana Evans, you got a chance. And you know what? All you ask is for an opportunity, and that's what Louisville's got tonight.
By the way, Texas-South Carolina is the first game. Louisville-Stanford, the second game tonight from San Antonio. Both are available for you on ESPN. And Kelly Gramlich will be with us at the top of the hour. We look forward to talking to Kelly tonight, or this morning at 8 o'clock. And as we mentioned, Louisville legend Asia Durr will be here at 9:15 this morning. That's a special treat for us as well. No real heavy news items yesterday to start the show, Pac. Nothing kind of bounced off the page, did it?
I don't know about that. I thought last night Kim Mulkey, the incredible coach from Baylor, women's team, because the men's team punched their ticket, the women did not. That's how good basketball has been in Waco. Mm-hmm. I thought Kim Mulkey's comment last night about, well, they shouldn't do any more COVID tests. These girls have worked hard enough. Let's get them in the Final Four to play. I about fell off the couch. Yeah. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah,
time
well,
out
that,
here,
yeah.
Coach. I mean,
there's that.
If I'm not mistaken, Coach, I believe you're the same one that called this whole NCAA tournament a money grab a couple months ago, and she caught heat for that, and probably rightfully so. But her comment last night, maybe she was just upset with the no call, and she should have been, because that was a terrible swallow the whistle by the refs last night in that game. But that comment probably will grab some attention and dialogue this afternoon on the radio show, when as hard as everybody's worked. And this is a lady, by the way, who had COVID back in January. But I mean, I thought that the priority should be number one with your students and their health, to say, oh, let's just stop COVID testing so we can get this tournament in.
Right.
That to me, if you're looking for a headline from what we do for a living in the world of college sports, that would be one that I would say would probably be on the top of the list. That one will garner some attention today, I assume.
Yeah, let's gonna hope that that's out of frustration of the way the game ended last night as much as anything else, right?
Hey, she said it. I mean,
No, I know. Yeah, and you're right. Compared to what we said earlier about the money grab and all these other things,
the coach
of the Bears has made some headlines this year.
That's one end of the spectrum to the other. We went from that we shouldn't have the tournament because it's nothing more than a money grab, which, by the way, is a sport that's made her very wealthy. We've gone from that end of the spectrum to the other end of the spectrum. That, oh, well, now we got here. Let's just forget this COVID testing and let's move on, make sure we get the games in.
Right.
Hey, I can't make this stuff up. Can't make it up.
No. Not at all. We are going to go through an exercise here this morning where you can also visit with us at 844-SAY-ACCN. One sentence to describe your ACC team in 2020-2021. Now, a little bit like the accounting exercise and some of the other things we tend to do on the old Packer and Durham program, we have not checked each other's answers. These are coming clean from the old right there. Coming clean back.
Okay. I will tell you, when I did this yesterday, it took me about 5 minutes. This was easy.
Good.
Rattled right through these. Yeah. Layup. Now, fans will see ours, probably mock them, and then you can partake, right? You can come. You're a fan of fill in the blank. You have one sentence. You don't have a paragraph. You know, this wasn't Muffet McGraw yes or no yesterday, and she gave me a three-minute dissertation about who was going to win these games and the number one seeds. It's not necessarily yes or no, but you have one sentence to describe your ACC men's basketball team's season. Right? That's what we're going to do. That's the game plan.
Sometimes I didn't even use a sentence. I just put 3-4 words together and said, there you go.
That's fine. I mean, if you don't want them to be completely conjugated, that's completely fine. We will roll with that here on ACC Network. I mean, we are a league that I've always taken a great deal of pride saying educational values matter. We would like to use complete sentences during this exercise, Wes, but if you just want to throw a couple words on there and kind of a word association, we will accept that. And there's probably a reason we will accept that. Because we here at the ACC Network would like to use complete sentences.
God bless Ms. Reed, my English teacher from the seventh grade at Apex Middle School. That's bless her heart. She'll be crushed. Nice. That's thanks. Right. Appreciate it.
That's all right. It's waiting
Flying
for you
Phoenix
you get back.
Fish.
That's it. Your fish is waiting for you to get Flying. Back here in the basement one of these months.
Flying Phoenix Fish. All right, when we come back, one sentence per team and more. Kelly Gramlich coming up top of the hour. Some of this is rugged. Just going to tell you right off the top. Some of this not going to be very kind. We'll get to it. Good morning. Great to have you with us on ACC Network.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, it's a Tuesday. We are going to attempt to do this for every single ACC men's basketball program now that the season is officially over and done with. By the way, congratulations to Baylor and Houston. They punched their tickets last night. Wes, you ready to go? One sentence. Now, fans can participate with this. Your favorite school, you have to define the season in one sentence, not a paragraph, not a run-on.
That's right.
One sentence. All right. Here we go. We're going to lead off with Wahoo, University of Virginia. And I'll lead off with this. I said for Virginia, it was a solid, but too many. Try this again after bragging about. For Virginia, the Hoos were solid.
Really?
But
tell me about that sentence structure again.
That's it. But too many deficiencies to be elite. That's how I define Virginia. Good year. It was all right. You know, did what they did. Picked to win the league. They did in the regular season. But as far as being elite, just too many holes. Too many holes, Wes. That's how I looked at it.
That's a good one. I know where you're coming from there. Too many deficiencies to be elite. I got literal with some of these in that mine for Virginia is goodbye is hard because in Virginia's case, we felt like Virginia was making that move, and then the COVID pause, right? And I'm sorry, part of this storyline of college basketball is going to be these teams that had to go in and out of the pause. And the timing on this got to be, in some cases, like Virginia, brutal, right? I mean, just brutal. Where your last look is going to be this team on the floor in Bloomington at Assembly Hall losing to Ohio in an NCAA tournament game in a, what, 4-13 game?
Yep.
And you're thinking to yourself, how in the world is it going to end like this? And for Virginia, I think it makes the ending hard. And that's why that was my sentence for the Cavaliers. I mean, all the other stuff, yes, you could write the too many deficiencies, things like that. But to me, the literal finish of this for Virginia is probably the most difficult thing to process at this point, I think, for Tony Bennett.
Get it? You know, kind of a strange end. Yeah. I mean, the 4-13 loss, and we've chronicled Virginia's unbelievable roller coaster in the NCAA tournament the last 4 years, where you've seen a 1 seed lose to a 16, you've seen a 4 lose to a 13, and sandwiched right in there was one of the most miraculous runs to a national title. And you throw also one year that we didn't have the tournament. So Virginia is taking their fans all over the place when it comes to the NCAA tournament here in recent memory.
Yeah. Florida State is next. And look, I'm kind of at a point with Florida State where I think Florida State has done just about everything we need them to do, sans one thing. And that one thing is going to be the last step, which is proving to be a lot more difficult than I think we thought. And that's get to a Final Four. And for me, I will qualify this Florida State team as another one that is trying to take that last step. And until it happens, I will say the last step is the hardest. And, Pac, when I was putting this together yesterday, I started thinking about Dean Smith teams trying to win national championships at Carolina. Remember they got to the Final Four, got to the final game in 77, got to the final game in 82, finally knocked it in our final game in 81, then knocked it in 82. The last step for Leonard Hamilton, the last step for Florida State, all the good work you've done. But you said this yesterday, and it kind of stuck with me through the day putting this together. Florida State didn't really give us anything from the final regular season game on, did they? They just kind of were there. And I kept coming back to the last step's going to be the hardest for Florida State. And that's kind of the way I qualify this year.
My sentence for Florida State basketball this year is a weird year for the league's most talented team. And I think I might have said this off the air yesterday. When you think about Florida State, did you win the ACC regular season? No. Did you win the ACC tournament?
No.
Did you get to the Final Four? No. But I think this is the best team in the league. So, like I said, it's a weird year for the league's best team. And it's kind of hard to even say that. I mean, I said the most talented team. But, you know, is Florida State the best team in the league? Because how often in any sport in the history of college athletics could you say, well, the best team in our league didn't win the regular season or the tournament championship or a national title? I mean, it's really bizarre. And you throw in a couple COVID pauses in between. I mean, I expect Florida State to be back because Leonard's built a great program. But I think the two comments that we gave for the sentences for Florida State, you could probably combine them in some respects. But, you know, there's still work to be done in Tallahassee, and they know it. They left some meat on the bone this year.
No question.
All right, Hokies are next. Pretty easy for me. The biggest surprise of the ACC basketball season to me was Virginia Tech.
Yep.
And I'll go back to when we started this whole bad boy, and I said, I've got sources that tell me you guys are sleeping on the Hokies. We're going to be really, really good. I'm like, okay, cool. We got to see it to believe it. Well, guess what? ACC Coach of the Year, this was a really, really talented team. It got better as the year goes on. And really, once again, COVID kind of put a stop to their momentum a little bit. But, man, you got to be excited if you're a Virginia Tech Hokie fan.
Yeah, I agree along the same lines. My sentence is you took the next step. I think Virginia Tech did exactly what you have to do if you're Mike Young in a second year of a program. Look, they had some moments with Buzz Williams. There's no question about that. Sweet 16, that kind of deal. But you've taken the next step to being kind of in that front half, if you will. You've got continuity in players. You've got guys that can be developed. Keve Aluma's a great example of that. I think you've got Hunter Couture, Tyrese Radford, Naheem Aline. I mean, you've got guys that right now we can look at 21, 22 and go, Virginia Tech might be pretty good. And I think you've taken the next step. And if you take that into the offseason, I think you got to be awfully proud of where Virginia Tech is, despite the opening game loss in the NCAA tournament.
There you go. All right, let's go to Georgia Tech. You lead.
All right, Georgia Tech. There is no question that a year ago the Jackets took the NCAA penalty and then there wasn't a Final Four championship. And they, remember, they finished a year ago playing really, really well, right? And they started off against Georgia State in a 4-overtime loss and Mercer. And you started thinking, well, wait a second. How in the world? And they ended up having a really nice year. But the one thing I will say about Georgia Tech, the ending isn't always fair. And to not have the ACC player of the year in the NCAA tournament, is it shouldn't qualify the whole year, but it certainly writes the last page. And that's not right, but it happened. And so for me, the ending isn't always fair. They did get an ACC tournament title, but the end for me, we never got to see Georgia Tech at full throttle in the NCAA tournament. That's a shame.
That would be correct. My sentence for Georgia Tech is a championship banner will be hung in the ATL. At the end of the year, yeah, you're bummed out about how it ended. COVID certainly had a play there. But you know what? What you're going to remember is not only the face shield up there behind my shoulder, but you're going to know that when you next time you walk into that building, which hopefully you'll have 100% capacity, you know what? You're going to look to the rafters, and you're going to see Georgia Tech ACC champs. And you know what? They'll never take that away from you. So, to me, that was the sentence that captured really the magic that Josh Pastner and his guys found down the stretch to win an ACC title. And you know what? That's yours, boys. You've earned it. So, congratulations. Mm. So, all right, Clemson's next.
I will
go ahead.
I will say this real quick. It's been a long time. A long time since people in Atlanta felt as good about Georgia Tech basketball, really on the men's and women's side, as they do right now. It's been a long time. So good for Nell Fortner, good for Josh Pastner, good for Georgia Tech fans to have those kinds of moments going into the offseason.
That's right. And by the way, just a reminder to fans of the show, whatever school you root for, you can participate on the show with your own sentence. We're going to cover all 15 teams on this thing, all right? 844-SAY-ACCN, all right? 844-SAY-ACCN, the number for you to jump on board and have fun with this. All right, Clemson is next. I'm going to lead here. Hey, defense travels, but eventually you got to score the basketball. You know what? In this day and age, and you're finding it out in the tournament, that, hey, there's a lot of folks playing really good defense, but you've got to be able to make shots. And when Clemson did, they were good. They were really, really good. Mm-hmm. And they've got the quality wins to prove it. But as far as getting to, as you keep saying, the next step, you got to be able to shoot and you got to be able to score on a consistent basis. So there, my question and Q&A with the Tigers is pretty simple. Hey, we know about the D. You got to find the O, consistent O. So there you go.
It's amazing. It's amazing how close we are on this one. For me, the D didn't always lead to three.
Yeah.
I thought Clemson was fairly consistent defensively all year long, especially in ACC play. But when the Tigers also fortified it with some perimeter shooting, they were difficult to handle. But it didn't always happen. And nights where they didn't have their fastball on defense, it could be a tough night all around. But if Clemson got you with three-point shooting and defense, they were going to wear you out. And it didn't always happen. But when it did, the Tigers were really good. And you can pinpoint the specific games where, hey, look, they didn't either have the defense or have the shooting. Because they played a game. Remember, we talk about Georgia Tech from time to time being risk-reward. Clemson played a little bit of a risk-reward too, but it was predicated on defense, right, and possessions. So you had to maximize possessions against Clemson. And if you're Clemson, because of the way you were going to play, you had to make sure you were at least above average offensively, given what you were going to try and do. And most nights they were. Some nights, not so much.
Well, I know the one and done in both the ACC tournament and the NCAA tournament left a bad taste in fans' mouth. But when I think if you take a step back at the end of the year, which is now here, and you take inventory of what Brad Brunell's guys did, it was a successful season based on what the traditional normal would be for Clemson basketball. You know, you finished fifth as far as the seeding goes within the league. Your non-conference wins were out of sight. You played really good teams. You beat a bunch of really good teams. But at the end of the day, you know what? You want a little bit more. And I think Brad Brunell probably felt like Florida State a little bit, where there was some meat left on the bone at the end of the year, that there could have been a deeper run in the ACC tournament. Certainly could have been a deeper run in the NCAA tournament. But big picture, was Clemson better than anticipated? The answer was yes, they were.
Yeah. Well, we move on to Carolina here before the break. For me with the Tar Heels, the simple statement is shooting can cure some ills, but not all. If Carolina were a much more consistent perimeter team pack, that would be a certainly welcome addition to what I thought was a pretty good team. But it wouldn't cure them all. I mean, the Knights, Kerwin Walton and Caleb Love hit perimeter jump shots, or R.J. Davis. You knew you were going to get it inside from them, right? But, man, every once in a while, too, they throw a ball in the dirt on defense at you, right? And that was also part of their ills. And that's the one sense I keep coming back to. And remember the last time we saw them, Wisconsin was shooting it good from the perimeter. And I think that's just kind of that kind of left me a little bit at the end, that while I think Carolina wants to be a better shooting team, certainly better than they've been the last 2 years, it would cure some ills, but it wouldn't cure them all.
Mine is almost a math equation, so Wes, be careful. Great bigs plus erratic guards equal sleepless nights. And North Carolina's bigs were as good as anybody in the country, their collection. Now, granted, since then we have seen departures to the NBA and transfer portal. I get it. But when North Carolina's guards held on and you know, possessed the basketball and made shots, that was a really talented team. When they did not and decided to guard like me, they looked like the NCAA tournament heels, where they just got ran right out of the gym. So Roy Williams would probably be nodding in agreement with that. Great bigs plus erratic guards equals sleepless nights, and I'm sure he had a few. And so did North Carolina fans watching this team. A lot of highs, a lot of lows. But I do expect them to be back next year. I think North Carolina's going to be okay.
Yeah, I do too. 844-SAY-ACCN for your comments. Don't forget, you can put them on social. Use the hashtag Packer in Durham. Give us one sentence on your team, and we'll share some of them here today and maybe even tomorrow. When we come back, we'll dive into Louisville and Duke and more as we go one sentence per team. One season, one sentence. Nice work on the banner. Stay tuned. Monday's or Tuesday's Packer and Durham is underway here on ACC Network.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Tuesday. All right, one sentence is all it takes to describe your season, your favorite team season. Because the ACC men's season's done. Right. The Louisville Cardinals with the ladies' side play tonight against the number one seed, Stanford. We will continue to address that game as the day goes on. 844-SAY-ACCN, all right? 844-SAY-ACCN. You can participate with this exercise. Hashtag Packer and Durham. If you want to do something on social media, we'll address those as the morning progresses. All right, Wes, we're going to lead off this segment with Louisville. And I will lead.
Yep.
And really for the Cards, never whole, so we'll never know. Kept waiting on Malik Williams, and boy, I just thought with him in the fold, with those guards, I thought Louisville could be really, really dangerous, but we just never really got it. Maybe for a game or two, maybe, with Malik. And then when he re-injured, just out of sight, out of mind, and the Cards, unfortunately, had to watch Georgetown and Oregon State take their spot. And so, again, we'll really never know about the Louisville Cardinals.
I think that's a perfect scenario. I use the same type thinking in remarking the Cards as well, because I said absence makes the heart grow fonder. God, how many times did we talk to somebody from Louisville during the course of the season who kept talking about Malik Williams' return and what it was going to mean to their team, Pack, right? Yep. And we got two games less than that. But and you feel for Malik, you feel for Chris Mack and this team, but it seemed to really temper everything about the basketball team, didn't it? And at the end of the day, you had less than two games with the guy, and it impacts the way you look at the team. And look, I know they're incredibly disappointed not to have made the NCAA tournament. But in all honesty here, he's a really, really talented player. I find it hard to believe, though, that there was so much riding on his return 12 weeks into the regular season. You know, you follow me on that? I can't – that you were holding hope on Malik Williams' return for the University of Louisville. I thought there'd be more to it this season, but evidently it wasn't. And that's disappointing, I'm sure, for everybody involved there.
Well, here's the good news. The good news is Malik Williams, unlike some this transfer portal news, is coming back. And that is a huge, huge get for Chris Mack, to know you've got a guy with that talent coming back into the fold. Again, for Louisville, it's kind of like I said, it's kind of the unknown at the end. We just never really got a chance to see them at 100%. But we'll see what we come up with 21-22. All right, Syracuse is next. You lead.
All right, I want you to make me remember more than March. Like this, make me remember more than March. The last couple times you want to tell me about a season, we drift back to what you did in March. I am actually optimistic about Syracuse going to next year, despite Coach Boeheim's comments yesterday with Brent Axe on radio in the Central New York area. I actually think this has got a chance to be a pretty good team, but I got to remember more than March, Pac. You won a couple games in the tournament, and everybody was feeling good, and Buddy Boeheim became a story. Look, we think he's a great player long before the NCAA tournament, but give me something else. Give me some January moment. How about a little February vibe, you know, for the Orange? We just haven't gotten that here recently from Coach and his team.
And who knows what anybody's roster is going to look like given the transfer portal. I had a phone call yesterday. Somebody asked me about the transfer portal. I said, you know, here's my approach on the transfer portal moving forward. I think everyone is leaving. Let's just take the assumption that everyone is leaving. And so when we get together in October, November, tell me what your roster looks like, because it's too dizzy trying to keep up with who's in, who's out, who's thinking about moving. So I'm assuming everybody's gone. So hopefully everybody makes a decision. We see what the roster looks like.
You're just going to assume that 350 some odd schools and everybody's checked out.
We're gone. We're seeing. See, it's like you and I are going to enter the transfer portal at 10:01 a.m. And tomorrow morning, you'll find out if it's Packer and Durham on a Wednesday. My guess is we will be back, but everybody's on the transfer portal. We're all leaving.
Josh,
enough of this.
Drew.
Yeah, everybody. You'll find out tomorrow morning who's on board.
Hank,
to
Matt,
do the show.
Back row.
Right. Who's Ezzie, in front of the camera? Who's
all in the portal.
It? Chester. Listen.
We're all in the portal.
Chester Fuller, transfer portal. I hope they're going to be hanging out with me tomorrow.
Clifford in the portal.
The boys, I'll take that back. I don't think Chester or Fuller right now are going transfer portal based on that shot. Neither one of them have moved one millimeter since the show started. Look at them. They look like they've been shot, but they haven't, I promise you.
All right.
Mine for Syracuse is better late than never. Better late than never. Hey, you guys, every year, you know what? You just do your thing, and you're around 500, and you're in ninth place in the ACC, and you got one good win, you got one bad loss, and then all of a sudden March hits, and lo and behold, the magic happens. So better late than never for Syracuse. Better late than never.
So we're really the same. We're really kind of the same on Syracuse.
Yeah. I mean, how could it not be? I mean, every year we have the same conversation. Are they on the bubble? Are they in? Are they out? I'm not sure. Yeah. Look at their quad fours, and coach breaks quad threes and fours down. And you're like, And also they go to the ACC tournament when they're supposed to be one and done. They beat North Carolina by 100. You know, they're not going to be in. They got to beat the NC State or their toast. They look like a world beater. Syracuse, it's like the same deal every year. They got a double-digit seed during the Sweet 16. Here we go again. So better late than never for Syracuse.
You're right.
All right, Duke. This will be an interesting one. I will lead with this. Duke basketball was a failure based on Coach K's standards. That's how I define it. When you're a 10 seed for the first time ever, when you're sitting on the couch during the NCAA tournament, you know what? For Duke, that's a failure. So there you go.
All right. I was a little more simple in this approach. I just said youth isn't always served. Look, I think the skew to the one and done has been very, very good for Duke. Don't get me wrong. I ain't seen some unbelievable talent. But there's always been that chance that it might not work. And this year, didn't work. It just didn't. I think you got really good players. I think you're going to benefit as a program by having a good many of those guys back. I think DJ Stewart and Jeremy Roach are going to be tremendous. I think you got talented guy. Mark Williams is sensational. Going to be a really good player in this league. But you paid the price this year for being young. And, you know, it came in the form of a 10 seed in the tournament. And you didn't make the NCAA. And you had moments. You just didn't have enough of them. So.
I don't know. I thought that was a miserable year for Duke basketball. I mean, that's not Duke basketball. Sorry. Play some defense.
No, it's not. But Pac,
that team wasn't very good.
Tell me though this, all right? We can look at Duke and say more often than not, the one and done inventory has worked out for Coach K, wouldn't you say?
No question. No doubt.
More often than not. I mean, immensely successful.
Let's be honest, though. Duke and Kentucky not being in the NCAA tournament is a failure of a season. That's what it is.
For them, yes, absolutely. No doubt.
I'm talking about.
And you're right.
Duke,
I mean,
and Kentucky have lived on. They will always be young. You know, that's just the nature that they've agreed to say, hey, we're going down that route. And when you do, you better hope those rooks are really, really good. And the team can gel. And then you throw in COVID and pausing and nobody has a chance to develop any chemistry and wildly erratic. But when you give me a year that Duke and Kentucky aren't in the NCAA tournament, I'm going to tell you that 100% of Duke fans and 100% of Kentucky fans will tell you this was a failure of a season. And it was on their standards.
Yeah. Let's move to NC State. NC State, to me, is the future is bright. And I know we're in a transactive nature of college basketball. But to me, if you look at Kevin Keats' roster and you look at kind of what this team did, Shaq Moore, Cam Hayes, Manny Bates, there is a lot of positive right now in Raleigh. And a good bit of this happened back after the Devin Daniels injury.
Well, that leads to my sentence, and that is they played their best ball after their biggest injury. That's how I would describe NC State's season. When Devin Daniels went down, I thought, stick a fork in these guys. You can't lose that many points this late into a season with the already playing uphill. NC State showed me some guts down the stretch. And, yeah, they're disappointed they lost to Colorado State in the NIT. But I thought they played well down the stretch. Now, granted, Syracuse waxed them pretty good, but Syracuse played hot down the stretch. But I think if you're an NC State fan, you're cautiously optimistic. And, again, I have no idea who's back. I just told you. I'm assuming everybody's leaving, and then eventually we'll herd everybody back together and kind of figure out what a roster looks like in college basketball, given this goofy transfer portal. But I think, though, if you're an NC State fan, you can kind of see light at the end of the tunnel a little bit. Now, they just got to get there, right? That's the key.
Yeah. One more before we get to break. How's that? Miami.
All right, I will lead with Miami. Is anybody, I do mean this, is anybody healthy? Not 1 year, but two years of just ridiculous injury problems. And I know we got the transfer portal issues here too, so I'm not even going to go down that road. But we're talking about this season. Is anybody healthy? Looking back at the wins that this team had with as few scholarship players available, I kept thinking to myself, man, if Miami were healthy, how good would they have been? I think they would have been really good. I mean, really good. So it's hard to judge Jim Larrañaga. That's why I told him when he's on the show a couple times from an ACC coach of the year, I thought he did one of his best coaching jobs of his incredible career this season, given how few guys he had to play. And you know, to watch Isaiah Wong deliver and get better compared to where he was a year ago. Again, the great run in the ACC tournament. If only everybody could have stayed healthy, Miami could have been a factor.
I think that Miami is one of two schools I will talk about today that you have now seen the last 2 years, and by what their coaches want and the success they've had, they are forgettable. And you wonder how long the return will take. You know it's going to take some time, and that's what I have for Miami. The return takes time, but Pac's already mentioned the injuries. We're assuming everybody's in the transfer portal. The University of Miami, if it's going to happen, it needs to start moving north here. They're one of a couple schools like this. And I think they've got a proud program. I think they've had great success with Jim Larrañaga. But the timing of the last 2 years has just been brutal, Pac. It really has. And you wonder how long the return will take. And right now, it's getting ready to be year three, in all honesty.
Transfer portal. I'm going to get blank sheets of paper.
Everybody's in it.
Everybody's in it. I mean, that's where we are, Wes.
Everybody's in it. Yeah. All right. So if you're with us, 844-SAY-ACC, and we'll take your comments on your team. Use the hashtag Packer and Durham on social media. And remember the Packer and Durham guideline, everybody's in the transfer portal.
Everybody, including us.
We're going to go with that. We're going to go with that for the time being. When we come back, we got spring football, by the way.
Yeah, don't forget
Roddy
that.
Jones, Eric McClain, and I. Coverage of the Orange White on Saturday from Frank Howard Field at Clemson's Memorial Stadium. 1 o'clock right here on ACC Network, streaming live on the ESPN app. We come for it all after we pull up a chair right here on ACCN. All right, sit tight when we come back. Interesting story yesterday about earning potential for female athletes based on social media. We're going to go down this road, and it's going to get interesting when you think about it. Just on this platform alone, we'll touch base with that next. And Kelly Gramlich at 8 o'clock on Packer and Durham.
The Packer and Durham podcast. Packer and Durham.
And Durham on a Tuesday. We'll continue our one sentence, one season for the rest of the ACC. And again, you can participate. 844-SAY-ACCN, hashtag Packer and Durham. Kelly Gramlich's going to join us coming up here in about 10 minutes or so. Looking forward to that. But Wes, I ran across a story yesterday which I thought was worthy of a mention. And I will be the first one to tell you that I am not a big fan of social media. I do it because I'm told I need to do it. But apparently there is a value to this, and name, image, and likeness is going to be a big, big deal in 21. So as a fan, you better get prepared for it because it's not going to go away and it's going to have a huge impact. And there was an interesting list put together regarding the available players that they're currently in the Elite Eight. I know we've had some people punch tickets last night for the Final Four, but the values of the players, men and women, based on social media, name, image, and likeness, the markets that you play in. Here is the list, all right? Social media popularity in the Elite Eight. Now, when you go zipping through this list, you're going to see number two on the list is Hailey Van Lith from Louisville. Twitter and Instagram following. Now, you know how much I care about this. On a scale of 1 to 10, it wouldn't even register at a 1. However, Haley Van Lith with 696,000 Twitter and Instagram followings. The estimated annual earnings, just under $1 million. Let that marinate a second.
Well, and the thing is, when you take it to comparison, Haley Van Lith has got an established value on social media. Now, in name, image, and likeness, we also understand, too, that there's going to be the potential for, quote, sponsorship. Some are going to be more impactful than others. On that list we just showed you, Paige Beckers is regarded as one of the top freshmen in women's college basketball, led UConn to a big win last night. I call your attention to the third name on the list. Jalen Suggs is regarded as one of the top 3 to 5 picks in the NBA draft, Pac.
That's right.
He's almost double behind Haley Van Lith.
Yeah.
The idea here is these are the kind of lists right now that when NIL becomes a thing, this is where the value market is on some of this. Engagement rates, all sorts of things. Athletic department revenue, how those dollars are going to be divided. And, you know, this is a list that was cut loose based on the Elite Eight of men's and women's college basketball. I found it to be very interesting to look at. I also think about 3 to 5 years down the road when NIL is a thing, Mark. What's this list going to look like? What's it going to be? Who's going to capture the marketplace like a Haley Van Lith or a Paige Beckers or a Jalen Suggs? What's that marketplace going to look like in the ACC? What's that marketplace going to look like nationally in college athletics? That's something we all need to kind of be looking towards on the horizon because that's not that far off.
Oh, no, it's here. I mean, forget 3 to 5 years. It's here in 3 to 5 minutes. And the other thing, too, when I think you look at the ACC footprint, obviously ACC Network, the exposure of networks that cover all these sports. But when you look at the ACC footprint, Wes, and the major markets that it encompasses, and people always talked about expansion. Well, expansion was about eyeballs and television, right? You start talking about, hey, you got Syracuse that hopefully can deliver the New York City market. You've got Boston, BC with Boston. You got Pittsburgh. You got Miami. You got Georgia Tech in Atlanta. You go through, you know, whatever you want to come up with, the Carolinas, the Raleigh-Durham, Chapel Hill. From that perspective, you know, Louisville television market, Clemson will get, you know, tied into the upstate of South Carolina, Greenville, Spartanburg, Asheville. You know, those are going to be key components in terms of name, image, and likeness and the dollars that can be generated. So, yeah, you got to be a player. Yeah, you got to play for teams that are high profile to get exposure. And if you're in the right markets, ta-da, you have the perfect combination to really be able to maximize your name, image, and likeness value. So, again, for a lot of folks, you'll see that list in this last 6 minutes. You'll go, you guys are speaking Chinese. What are you talking about? Well, I'm just telling you the nature of the beast, the lay of the land, the landscape of college athletics is about to change unlike anything you've ever seen before. And it's coming. And you better deal with it. So I saw that list yesterday. I said, you know, we should probably just discuss this because to see somebody like Haley Van Lith be number two currently, men's and women's, that's a combined list. That's not just the ladies' list, the men's list, combined. And for a guy as great as Jalen Suggs, as you pointed out, with Gonzaga, the number one ranked men's team, a guy that's going to be written, NBA draft written all over him. Here's old Haley Van Lith for Louisville. Not even the star player on her team, that'd be Dana Evans, has a value of just under $1 million based on social media followers. And by the way, for the record, I looked it up. My value was $1.32. Instagram and Twitter followers, $1.32 for the Pac-Man. So I'm feeling pretty good about that. $1.32.
Good. I like that.
Yep.
Down the road, it's probably worth our investment to find someone to help us kind of qualify some of this, how it would look and what would make for the markers going forward, especially in the ACC footprint. And as you mentioned, more top 50 television markets in the ACC than in any other of the Power Five conferences in the footprint. So Kelly Gramlich is next. We're going to get a feel on what Louisville will be up against tonight against Stanford and Haley Van Lith. And can the Cards pull the upset? Strange to say when it's a 1-2, but we'll get into it with KG. Hour 2, Packer and Durham next on ACCN.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.